at the Crop Development Center at the University of Saskatchewan in Saskatoon, Canada. He breeds peas, and he has a new breeding effort on soybeans. And he has been doing pea breeding for yield, disease resistance, and end-use quality. And Tom, the floor is yours. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Mary, and thanks, Ray, for organizing this session and giving me the opportunity to speak to you. Welcome here, everybody. I want to talk a little bit about the theme of biofortification in pea and lentil. I'm working mainly on pea, as Mary mentioned, and my colleague Bert Vandenberg is breeding lentil, and we've been working quite a lot with Ray in the last decade or so. When we look at breeding a crop, there's always many objectives in that effort, from yield to protein, different markers for traits. We're involved in an international consortium for sequencing the pea genome. Heat tolerance, if it gets hot, it can reduce yield in the summer. And biofortification is the theme for today, and that's what I'd like to tell you about. You all know that pulse crops are nutritious, many health benefits to these crops, and I think in my mind, as we think about biofortification, can we improve even further? When I talk about end-use quality of pulses, I think of it in various ways. The visual quality, many pulse crops are purchased based on how the seeds look when you grab them in your hand. Cooking, flavor, aroma, and nutritional, so macro, micro. These days, when it comes to macro, we've had a little buzz lately in our part of the world, and maybe beyond, in terms of protein. And just in the last couple of years, there's been expansion of various facilities that are dealing with protein extraction from peas. So you know of people using soy for this purpose or whey powder. You can buy these expensive containers of protein for $50 each or something like that. But there is certainly a market for vegetable-based type. And so you see these various companies have set up factories in Western Canada, or they're in the process of setting them up. And recently we had an announcement from someone from Hollywood just next door to us at near Saskatoon who have announced that they're building this company called Verdient to mainly to extract protein from peas. Maybe in the future they might use faba bean. Why the interest in these compounds? For example, here's one. You can make burgers that are vegan, and they taste good, apparently, and you see the second item on the ingredient list is pea protein isolate. Or perhaps you can make pea milk. This is a fairly recent announcement. Mind you, both of these previous two announcements came out of California, so I think that's where the innovation comes from. That's what I understand. So this product is essentially based on protein from peas. But that's not really the theme of my talk. The talk is about iron and zinc, and you know that anemia is an important issue in many parts of the world. The CGIAR centers have developed an initiative called Harvest Plus to try to enhance the micronutrient density of staple crops, and particularly they talk about iron, zinc, provitamin A, and folates. When Pulse Canada, which is an industry organization that I interact with, when they asked consumers what do they think about with respect to pulses, why would they consume them, they start by mentioning, you know, fiber and protein, but not too far down the list you see iron and then folate. So the consumer, I think, has some appreciation of these topics. So within our group, we've tried to address these micronutrient topics, and we started by looking at, well, okay, let's take various nutrients across bean, chickpea, field pea, lentil, and let's look at, for example, what proportion of the recommended daily allowance do they deliver? Male, female, there's different recommended amounts. And what you see for iron, as well as for basically all the nutrients on this list, maybe excluding calcium, is that if you consume 100 grams of these pulses, you're obtaining quite a good proportion of your RDA. Drilling a little further into the genetic side of things, Kishore Galli, who's a researcher working in our group, is looking these days at iron, selenium, and zinc, QTL analysis from a population contrasting in many traits, and he's finding some fairly substantial QTLs on various linkage groups related to iron and zinc, not so many for selenium. And we found that selenium is a bit more difficult because it's there in smaller concentrations and it's much more erratic in the soil. But for iron and zinc, not bad. In this study, we had an association mapping panel, and basically I just want to point out that this is particularly for iron. And there were various genomic regions identified associated with iron concentration. This is concentration at this point in this panel of P varieties. In terms of lentil, here we noted in terms of concentration, again, quite a good concentrations of iron and zinc across two locations over 2 years. There was also an association correlation between iron concentration and zinc concentration, 0.45 R squared. And similar to the association study on P, again, some significant QTL regions determined for both iron and zinc in this case in lentil. So we're trying to look at the nutritional side and the genetic side because we're breeders and we want to think about how we can select more effectively for these traits. I've been fairly involved with the phytic acid topic in the last number of years. You know it's the main storage form of phosphorus in seeds. It's not well digested by humans and other monogastrics. And in addition, it tends to bind on to some nice nutrients like iron and zinc. So following on the work of Victor Raboy et al., who's in Idaho, and my colleague Brian Rossnagel, who have been developing low phytate crops, corn, soybean, barley, we looked at using mutagenesis and identified two lines in pea that are low in phytate. If you look in the middle column in total phosphorus, they don't differ from the wild type, which is CDC Bronco, but they're certainly reduced in phytate, and in contrast, they're carrying more inorganic, which is available phosphorus. In terms of overall yield and seed weight, they were a bit reduced, so we need to do some breeding to try to recover yield and seed weight. We showed that the low phytate trait was inherited in a simple Mendelian fashion. We've worked with Ray on the KCO2 assay. I don't need to tell you more about that, as Ray already described it. But an interesting first result coming out of that on peas was from a master student project, Shofei Liu, who showed that when we took the low phytate pea varieties in the first two bars in each cluster, these are from four different locations in Saskatchewan, and the next three bars were from normal phytate varieties. You can see in each of the four locations, the low phytate lines had a higher level of iron bioavailability as assessed by the KCO2 assay. So we thought that was interesting. Another grad student, Arun, mapped the trait into linkage group 5 of P. He showed that, you know, as when we had more phytic acid, we tended to have less iron bioavailability. When we had less phytic acid, we tended to have more iron bioavailability. Ray talked about beans with red beans versus white beans, and I think a similar analogy here on lentil, where in this case, where if you look at the concentration, when you take the whole lentil seed, 78, once you dehull, the concentration goes down a bit, but the bioavailability went up by quite a lot. So polyphenols in that seed coat of the lentils, we suspect, is reducing iron bioavailability. And this was with CDC Maxim, which is the most widely grown lentil variety in Western Canada. But the same basically held true with a set of 12 red lentils and a set of 14 green lentils, that when you dehulled, the iron concentration went down a bit, but the iron bioavailability went up by quite a lot. The phytic acid concentration didn't differ much between whole or dehulled. In a maybe a complementary study from Della Valle et al., looking at the absorption of iron, comparing a lentil meal with various constituents, lentil being an important part of it, the overall iron absorption was not that much in comparison with ferrous sulfate as a supplement. But the absorption was higher in anemic persons compared to non-anemic. We've looked a little bit at carotenoids, another part of this story. We detected carotenoids in yellow pea, green pea, desi chickpea. The major one in both is lutein, followed by zeaxanthin. And pulses are, you know, relatively rich in carotenoids, I think more so than in wheat, for example. When we looked at a diversity panel, as expected, we saw a wider range of the total carotenoids, both in pea and chickpea. When we look in lentil, it's a similar range or basically a fairly wide range, but not unlike what we saw in the previous one for pea and chickpea, a fairly wide range, and again, lutein and zeaxanthin being the most prominent. When the lentils are cooked, so here we have four varieties of lentil, and raw or cooked, and what these authors showed was that actually the content of lutein, carotenoids, and tocopherols actually increased a little bit compared to the raw in cooking. And briefly, we've also looked a bit at folates, and this is the result of a pilot study, you could say, where we took bean, lentil, chickpea, and pea, only four cultivars. So from a breeding point of view, it's not a wide panel at all. But the folate protocols are very cumbersome and complex, so we didn't want to overwhelm ourselves, but we had four cultivars, three reps, and two locations. We did detect half a dozen different folates. If I just highlighted the total folate column, you can see that chickpea, bean, and lentil were quite rich in folate, where pea was substantially less. So we thought we need to do a bit more investigation on pea. Can we search the germplasm more widely in pea to detect material that might have greater folate concentration? And I think we're seeing something a bit promising. We're looking at a genome-wide association panel of pea, and this is the early result. And we have some that are reaching 50 ppm instead of 15 or 20 that we detected in our earlier panel. And so we want to associate the folate concentration with the genotypic information, and that's in progress. A recent MSc student in our group who spent some time also in Ray's lab, and thank you very much, Ray, for that. We were looking at would there be potentially some synergies between low phytate and maybe higher carotenoid concentration with respect to iron bioavailability. So first off, in this PR7 population, this one did not differ in phytate, but it did differ. The parents and the population were segregating for iron concentration, and so there was a modest positive correlation between the iron concentration and the iron bioavailability. It doesn't always happen, but in this case, there was a positive correlation. In the other two populations that came from low phytate crossed with normal phytate material, what we found in both of them was that there was an association between basically less phytate was associated with more iron bioavailability, or in contrast, more inorganic phosphorus was associated with more iron bioavailability. And in the one population, we had a positive correlation between lutein, the carotenoid, and iron bioavailability. None of these are high correlations, so there's many factors involved, the matrix of the material, but it gave us some clues. And what we found in those two populations between the low phytate and normal phytate varieties, these are about F6 lines, what we found was that we had some lines that had double or almost approaching triple the amount of iron bioavailability measured in nanograms ferritin per milligram of protein in comparison to CDC Bronco, which was our progenitor variety in developing the low phytate lines. And you might notice that the first cluster are all low phytate, and the final cluster are low phytate, and the middle cluster are normal phytate. So you can see quite an association between low phytate and more iron bioavailability. So we're thinking, what can we do in the future? What might be the next steps? And certainly, we'd like to continue to work with Ray and Ilad on validating some of the in vitro results with the poultry study. We would like to do a human study. We have something lined up. It's sort of pending funding support, but we have a collaborator in Spain who would like to look at low phytate versus normal phytate peas in people with celiac disease. Maybe baby food might be a high-value product or an interesting place to have more bioavailability. So, and I'm very open to any of your suggestions on that. So I feel like there's many opportunities to enhance the crops that we're growing and to enhance the availability of nutrients. So I think I'm going to shut down there, acknowledge the funding sources and collaborators. Thank you.
We have time for a question.
I don't work on chickpeas or pita peas or any of the peas you mentioned in your talk, but based on the current information which is available, can a recommendation be made? Chickpeas are better than pita peas or whatever, kidney beans or red beans?
Okay, the question is, can we make a recommendation on one pulse type over another? I mean, all the pulses have many, many good properties. All of them are delivering protein, slowly digestible starch, and various micronutrients. So there's just, I think, subtle differences among them in various traits. So I wouldn't want to create an argument amongst my colleagues about one being better than the other. One thing definitely that Bert Vandenberg, my colleague, will point out is that lentil, having small seeds, is faster cooking. And that is definitely an interesting benefit because, you know, everybody's in a rush. And so fast cooking, especially when you dehull and split lentils, that they're fast cooking. So that would be a slight advantage. But otherwise, the one thing with pea is that that I didn't really focus on is that most of the peas that we grow are essentially low tannin, so they don't have very many they have some but not so many phenolic compounds in the seed coat itself. So I think in that way they're quite naturally having less inhibitors to digestion.
Quick question. Is there someone else?
Yeah, I think I'd like to explore that a little bit more, but they are relatively low, and the lines we developed are about half of the wild type. So I was also contrasting that with lentil. It seemed that the lentil have considerably more background or baseline phytic acid. And so that may play into the benefits in terms of iron bioavailability. Yeah, good point.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay.